Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here today with Mac Burns with the Clatsop County Historical Society.
And a special guest.
We do have a special guest.
And this is a friend of the show and a friend of everyone, really, when you get down to it, isn't it? Aren't you a friend of everyone?
I try.
And he's got lots of stories.
Yes.
History. Both personal history and just, you know, lots of history in his head.
He's a world traveler, a track star, a preservationist, a city historian, official city right. historian. Do you have a business card?
Not on me.
No.
You should. And you're an alligator wrestler.
Yes, I have held and alligators, or at least caiman.
That's right, because there are no alligators in South America.
Wow.
They're is friends. That correct? They're yes, it's a complicated history, but yes.
So you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. John Gutenberger.
Welcome to the show.
Okay, so because we've got John, this is going to be a huge show.
Okay.
Packed with so much stuff, we're going to whip right through really fast this day in history.
Okay, let's do it. I'm ready.
And I think you're prepared as well.
I am.
December 6th, 1768, the first edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica is published.
Oh.
Now, did you guys have them in your household growing up?
Absolutely.
Did you?
We did not.
See, I had not only the Encyclopedia Britannica, but some strange older version that my parents had when they first got married. And that was the one that we were allowed to cut up for like school reports and things.
Oh, wow.
And then the good set, the Encyclopedia Britannica set, you couldn't. You could just look things up. Do you think anybody even uses that anymore since you just have Google now?
I use them.
Of course you do.
They're under my table for extra height.
Hold the level of the table out. That's funny. All right. 1849. Harriet Tubman escapes from slavery in Maryland for the second and final time.
Wonderful.
Way to go for her. 1877. The Washington Post publishes its first edition. We'll let listeners decide whether that's good or bad. 1884. The Washington Monument is completed. It's made of some 36,000 blocks of marble and granite stacked 555 feet. I like that round, like 555.
Right.
Was the tallest structure in the world when it was completed, 1884.
Wow, that is impressive.
I never realized it was the tallest when it was built.
Huh.
Yeah.
And as a architect kind of guy, your thoughts? Is it a wonderful monument or is it hideous?
No, it's a great monument. We all know it.
I think it is too. I like it. Have you been to the top?
I've never been there.
Have you?
Nope.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I have, but I was so young, I barely remember it. I remember a tiny little window and people as you were walking down the stairs, like right on top of you. So you were worried that you were going to, at least a six-year-old is worried that he's going to trip and be crowded. It's very sad. I've had nightmares. All right. 1923, the first U.S. presidential address broadcast on radio by my 31st favorite president, Calvin Coolidge.
Ooh, there you go. First one on radio.
He's the first on radio. Okay. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I didn't dive deep enough to figure out what he was talking about.
And on this day.
On this day.
Okay.
In 1923.
Okay.
I would like to believe that he was recording a promo for this show.
That could very well may have done that.
But I don't know what he sounds like, so I can't, like, my FDR imitation or JFK. I can't do an impression of him. All right, but our history highlight of the day, the thing that had the most impact on history, in my belief, that happened on this day, 1865. The 13th Amendment is ratified.
Yes.
Officially ending the institution of slavery.
Wow.
Kind of think that's important.
Incredible.
Definitely. Yes. That definitely tops the list. You did miss a couple. But I do agree that you picked the correct one. But in 1877, Thomas Edison made the first sound recording when he recited, very important here, Mary Had a Little Lamb into his phonograph machine.
Excellent.
And as a mom, you know, that is important.
Sure.
So when he picked the right one, right? I mean,
and then he put it to music on TikTok.
And he did it over and over and over. 1922, Benito Mussolini threatens Italian newspapers with censorship if they keep reporting, quote, false information.
Fake news. He's a buffoon.
Also up to you to decide what to think about that one.
Mussolini's just a buffoon.
And because I love Miami and I love Florida, I lived there from here, but lived there. 1947, Florida Everglades National Park is established.
Oh,
so speaking of alligators, yes, I've been several times, been there.
And are they gators or are they crocodiles?
They're alligators.
They're alligators there.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
When I moved to Florida, I was told every body of water in Florida, everybody has an alligator in it.
Wow. So you should be scared.
So don't go wading in the like deep water, like pooled up outside your home or the lakes. And
Did you see that video a couple of weeks ago that went viral? The dude like with a cigar in his mouth getting the puppy?
Yeah.
I just like the cigar in his mouth. That made me laugh. Okay. But John, in case nobody knows who you are, give us the 35-second, who is John Goodenberger?
I'm almost local. I celebrated my 50th anniversary in Astoria this summer.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And so I do preservation at the community college. I'm the city historian. I'm helping out with Mac on a book on the Flavelles as well. And just do general history and preservation in the area.
And you glossed right over that. So in case we're about to disappoint horribly our vast listening audience, we're not going to discuss the Flavelle book that you're working on.
Good.
We will bring you back.
Bring that back.
We'll bring you back when we're a little closer to it.
Sure.
That's but a good deep tease.
It is a deep tease.
So you have to listen every week, and 1 week we'll bring him back.
Suddenly he'll be back and he'll be talking about his book. But you've been working diligently on it for a while.
Yes.
And little bits and pieces that I've seen are remarkably entertaining and remarkably Flavelle and remarkably you. And once again, it will be your opus, and you are the only man, the only person alive that could have written this book. So we are anxiously awaiting it.
I will be happy when it's done.
But I asked you here today because you also interact with fourth grade
fifth
grade. And you have many stories you tell them. And this is one that the elementary school kid in me is still amused by. So we want to talk about two different trips, is it?
Sure. If we have time, we'll do two different trips. And we put this under the heading of, you know, something that Mary Christina Flavelle said. And she said that there was a competition in Astoria as to who had suffered the most to get here. And those who had suffered the most to get here would, of course, be able then to serve on city council or would be on school board or whatever. So it was that kind of who really has struggled to get here. And so I used two examples, two different stories. One, which they come literally to Astoria, and the second, which they go across the river to Willapa Bay. So we'll start with that one. Okay, so this is the Willie Kyle story. And, you know, when I tell this now to my fifth grade students, I use illustrations that the fifth graders have done of various parts of the story. So William Kyle, Dr. Kyle, was this German. He was this Rappist leader. Rappist is a type of religion. And it was in Bethel, Missouri. And this is in 1844. And they were craftspeople. They did weaving and furniture and made the wagons going to the west. But at that time, Missouri was getting really crowded. So Dr. Kyle says, I'm going to send seven people out to the west to find Eden. And they did. And it was Willapa Bay.
Who knew?
And so that's they then had to return and say, we have found Eden. And so Dr. Kyle selected 250 of his people to go with him to Eden in this wagon train. And one of the great promises he made was that his young son, Willie, who, depending upon who's telling the story, is somewhere between 11 and 19, I think he's 19, could actually lead the wagon train west.
I would think, even with people being more mature at an earlier age, if he was given the job of you're going to lead this wagon train, he would have to be in the older part of that range. Could have been 11.
No. So, you know, he makes this promise, but lo and behold, 4 days before the wagon train leaves, young Willie dies. But Dr. Kyle is a man of his word, and he said, dead or alive, my son is going to lead that wagon train west. And so he did. And so he created this very special wagon that was like a big bathtub lined with lead. And he filled the bathtub full of their Golden Rule whiskey, which is what they were famous for in Bethel, Missouri. And he placed Willie inside this tub and essentially pickled him in the whiskey. And off they went to the West.
I can't tell if Alana's amused or grossed out.
Oh, there's more. So this is 1855, and it's one of the most dangerous years to cross the United States or America at that time, because particularly the Sioux were just saying, we're done. You folks have come across our land. You've killed our animals. You're taking our land. We're done. And so they were fighting back. And so as the Kyle group crossed the Missouri River, they found a group coming back from the West who said, go home. It's too dangerous. But nope, they said, God is with us. And they took off singing German hymns, playing a guitar, a flute, a harp, and a drum. And they got to...
Ed Willie Kyle floating in a tank of whiskey.
So they get to Fort Kearney, and the military says, go back. It's too dangerous out here. And they say, nope, God is with us. We're going to keep on going. And they take off singing their German hymns. Well, then in a few days, they're met by this party of Sioux Indians who somehow heard that there is this very strange box leading the wagon train west. And so they go and they gather around and they say, open the box. And so Dr. Kyle does. And as they open the lid for the box, all of the German rapists break into song and start singing and playing their musical instruments. And the Native Americans look down into the box and they see this young man floating in whiskey. And they say, that's powerful medicine. Please go on your way.
See, I think what they probably thought was, you guys are all nuts. Just keep going.
Yeah. We don't want to.
So they get to Fort Laramie. And once again, the military says, go home. But no, they keep on going. And word is spreading like wildfire across the continent from one Native American tribe to the next that Willie is on his way. So one night, they are surrounded by 2,000 Sioux Indians who are in regalia, and they pass by solemnly, one by one, and pay tribute to Willie. And then they send them on their way. And then they get to the Green River area, which is a place with high cliffs, which is super dangerous and all, and maybe for ambushes. And instead of being attacked, the natives come out and say, no, over here. It's easier this way. Just come across the river over here. And they help them across the Wind River and send them on their way. They get into Oregon, and they wake up, and their cattle are missing. And they think, our luck is gone. No. The Native Americans are out wrestling up the cattle, say, oh, they got loose last night. Here they are. Go on your way. So they do, and they finally make it to Willapa Bay, and there they bury Willie on Christmas, the day after Christmas. And Dr. Kyle wrote this song for him, and you can go see a highway marker outside the grave, outside Raymond, Washington. Mm-hmm. So that's there. But since
so I have to say, I made, after I first heard this story from you, I made this pilgrimage with my family. We're very disappointed that there is a wonderful historical marker, and we have pictures next to it, but the grave itself is on private property. You can't actually see it.
No, you can't get
it's up on a ridge, so you can kind of see, okay, up on the ridge there he is.
So what I don't tell the fifth graders is that, well, while hearing this story for the first time, I thought, you've got to be kidding. You go all the way across the United States, and all this whiskey doesn't slosh out of this container, you know? And the person who initially told me this story, who was this kind of authority on it, said, hey, sloshing was not the issue. It was the issue that the men of the party kept trying to drain it and drink it themselves.
Oh, no.
I was wondering when that was going to come in.
Oh, no. Okay, this is why this should be a video podcast, because John is gleefully smiling and giggling with that line.
So you can decide if these folks deserve to be mayor, city council, or on the school board.
I'd like Willie to anything.
See, at least you admitted at the beginning this was your fifth grade self as well.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
We have, see, what I just, the juxtaposition of like the Oregon Trail game where everybody dies, or even the reality of history where mm-hmm. so many did pass away from dysentery or other calamities along the way. And just that's all it took was putting a guy, a dead guy in a box, and you get free house and free pass.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. Do we have time for a second?
Yeah, let's take a quick little break, and we're going to talk about somebody else on their way to Astoria. You've got Lana Mack and John on Adventure in History. We'll be right back.
December 28th, 1885. Never was such a rush made for any drugstore as is now at E.E. Dimond and Company's for a trial bottle of Dr. King's new discovery for consumption, colds, and coughs. All persons affected with asthma, bronchitis, hoarseness, severe coughs, or any affection of the throat and lungs can get a trial bottle of this great remedy by calling it above drugstore. Regular size, $1. December 27th, 1904. Packed to the doors, the lobby, and the sidewalk was the rule of the unique last night. The usual Monday night critics were there and pronounced the show a great one. Kendall and Thompson, two stylish-looking ladies, opened the show with cornet solos and army trumpets, giving the regulation army bugle calls. Kennedy and Vincent do a comedy act entitled The Bell and the Bellboy, the illustrated song which will never grow old, namely The Little Boy Blue. Jenkins and O'Neill have an act which is a scream from start to finish. The moving pictures, which have always been their best, are up to the usual standard, namely The Strike and A Drama in Midair.
And welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila, here with Mac Burns, and our very special guest today for our best show ever, John Gutenberger.
I think anytime you got a guy in a box of whiskey, it's going to be the best show ever.
This might not top my top of the list, but it will stay with me. The story's gonna stick. There we go.
I think another 10 years before your daughter can hear this one.
Oh, for sure. This is the next one or this one?
The first one.
Okay. But we do have another story.
Yes. So, and again, on this concept of suffering to get here, certainly we can look at the Adair family. John Adair, who is in Kentucky, his father was the governor, and he was appointed by Polk to be the customs officer here.
President Polk?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
And so they had 6 children, and they decided they were going to leave them at home in Kentucky rather than bring them here because there's no education out here.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I need to use the bathroom. Yeah. That's why they're leaving the kids at home.
Well, so the day comes and the parents say, we can't leave our kids. So they get everybody on board and they take a steamer down the Ohio and Mississippi rivers and takes 8 days to get to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, they go by 11 days by steamer to get to the Isthmus of Panama. And so they go down the Charges River. Oh, but first, I should mention, this is during the gold rush. So it's super crowded on board. There's limited space. They have a violent storm on their way to get there. And there's a cholera outbreak. So that's bad enough. So they get there, and then they have to get in a canoe and row 45 miles up the Charges River to Gorgon, where they climb out and they have to go over the mountains, 27 miles on a muddy trail in rainstorms and the heat. And
what's the basic age group of these kids at this point?
Let's just call them under 15.
Okay, so they're not a bunch of teenagers.
No,
they've got little ones.
They have little ones, and it's during this trip that we discover that his wife is pregnant with yet one more. No. And along this trip on the trail, 8 people die of cholera. And so they finally make it into Panama City, and they're there for a month, and it's just filled with cholera. But a ship comes along, and they're able to get a ship to San Francisco. But from Panama to San Francisco, it takes 29 days. Once again, we're during the gold rush. $1,500 for tickets for them to get on board in that time period. And when they did so, they didn't even get a bed. They had to sleep on the deck. The ship ran out of fuel twice and caught fire twice. And then they get to San Francisco. They've gone from the jungle heat, and now it's snowing in San Francisco. And they're stuck in San Francisco for a week. And then a man by the name of Captain Crosby, Nathaniel Crosby comes along and says, hey, I'm going up to Astoria. Come on with me. So they get on board with him. And on the third day out, they spring a leak. And then the winds shift and they get 600 miles off course. And they're practically in Hawaii. And the crew is about to go into mutiny when the winds shift again. And it takes them 28 days to get to Astoria.
Wow.
And a normal run in that time period is
a week.
Like a week, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So they get here, and many of the guys are gone. There's seven families here. And Mrs. Adair utters something to the effect of, what a dump. And I don't want my children near any of these men. They have beards.
Oh, no. You can't trust a guy in a beard.
You can't trust a guy with a beard. They speak with foul language. Get them away from my children. And so eventually they do settle in, and of course he becomes our customs officer. So you can kind of think about whether the Adair suffered more or whether the Kyle suffered more to get here.
See, I'm torn because, I mean, Kyle, dead guy.
Right.
That kind of puts a little bit of a bummer on the trip. Mm-hmm. But except for, like, the death, everything goes well. Versus pregnant and kids and cholera.
Yeah. And delays. And
delays. Yeah.
Ooh, I think that long traveling with that many children. Ooh, I think that one for sure.
See, anybody who's traveled with kids,
yes,
would agree. If it was just the couple trying to come here, it would still be bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And that the part that I don't think people appreciate is the number of guys in the Gold Rush coming. So these boats are just filled with single guys,
right,
or guys by themselves, I should say,
right,
on sleeping on the decks and just overcrowded. And I mean, this was not a luxury cruise line.
No, absolutely not.
So do the fifth graders hear both stories? What is their feedback?
The fifth graders jury says that the Adairs suffered the most.
Okay.
For many of those same reasons, because, you know, the Kyle's got a free pass. And the Adairs, you know, got all that kind, the storms, the leak, the fire, and that kind of that helpless feeling.
Mm-hmm.
To show my age a little bit, do any of these students, I mean, I know you haven't spoken to them this year, but have they played the Oregon Trail game? Are they familiar with this at all? Or is this total news to them about difficulty in travel and getting here?
No, they've by that time had the Oregon Trail story. So they should know that by the time they hit the fifth grade. And all, whether they play the game or not, they haven't mentioned that.
I played the game. It was still around when I was in fifth grade.
See, I mean, yeah, I had great. A long life because it was educational as well as
died fun. Of cholera over and over again.
Oh, every time.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I died of dysentery frequently.
Yes.
But I think snake bite once.
There you go.
Okay. So, John, we got a little bit of time. Talk about being city historian a little bit.
Sure. So this is largely a grant-funded position. And I am on call to the city. So they hire me for 25 hours a year. And that's to help with staff on historic issues, or maybe it's to help with people going through the Landmarks Commission who are struggling with that and helping them find a solution. Or if there's something else that's beyond that grant, such as most recently, I worked in a work group to rewrite the Fort Astoria sign. And that was an absolutely amazing experience because of all the people that were involved in that work group.
You talk about the different parties that were involved in that.
So we had two tribal members, Dick Bash from Clatsop Nehalem and Tony Johnson from the Chinooks. We had Chelsea Vaughn from Clatsop County Historical Society.
Oh, those guys.
Yeah. Jeff Smith from the Maritime Museum.
Oh, that place.
Rachel Stokeld from the Fort Clatsop National Park. And then we also had Rachel Jensen from Lower Columbia Preservation Society. They all brought their expertise in to guide me on the rewriting of this sign and really expand the language there.
So what was the problem with the sign?
Well, the sign, I mean, was a timepiece from 1948, just like the whole park is, this timepiece from 1948. And some of the language just seemed to be outdated. Some of the language about dominating the river, which is, you know, true, could be said in other ways and was interpreted perhaps as condoning it rather than just saying that that was the case. And we did have those kind of conversations in our group. How do you talk about difficult things without condoning them? Mm-hmm. And there was other things about, say, Jane Barnes, this young single woman that came out there. And the way it was played in the sign was perhaps less respectful to folks.
And just for the record, because every time her name is mentioned, I always want to clarify, not a prostitute.
No.
Not a prostitute at all.
No. So there were those kinds of problems. And so what we did was we talked about, if you were to walk to the site today, what would you see? How would you interpret it? And why is it important? And the answer was because of trade. That's why it's significant. And why are they here? Because there was already trade here. And Astor came and used that trade and expanded his trade through the Chinook and through the Clats of people.
Who already had a huge trading network.
Who had a huge network here already.
Yeah. So how about some of your work with the library?
So I'm working in the basement. I've been working in the basement for 3 years now.
They let you out every now and then.
They let me out every once in a while. I'm down in the so-called vortex. And it's an area where people just gave up. There wasn't money to deal with the stuff. And so these are groupings of historians' works, etc. And I'm taking those, I'm putting in the files, I'm putting them on spreadsheets, and we're going to get this stuff scanned and make it available for the public to be able to see. And that's what we're working on this next year, is to get things up online so that the public can see it and use these pieces as research material.
Oh, that's great. What fabulous project too during this time. Because, yeah. Well, because access has become more, it's become vulnerable, but also brought to light access issues when people can't get here, maybe.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. Great. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got about a minute and a half left. So you're a preservationist.
Yes.
What is the greatest preservation success in Clatsop County?
Success in Clatsop County? You mean besides the restoration of the Captain George Flavelle house?
Oh, that's the correct answer. Thank you. You often, though, say that's the beginning of the preservation movement.
That is. That with the Liberty, certainly in Astoria, that, the Liberty Theater, the Elliott Hotel, that's really what kind of pushed us over the top. We had been working for a long time, but that's what really started to push us over the top.
So you gave the correct answer. So we will bring you back to talk about your book about Mr. George Flavelle and his family.
So who's your favorite Flavelle?
Nellie.
Wow, that was quick.
So far, Nellie is absolutely positively my favorite. She is a strong woman. She is smart. She could live in this era and do just fine. She's kind, and she's an excellent writer.
Not just because of her diaries.
No, it's because of her letters. She really improved from her diaries in the early cases were pretty standard. And she really learns to express herself rather well in some of the later letters and actually in some of the later diaries, too.
Well, that's great. We look forward to having you back. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. We appreciate all of you listening. And we will talk to you again next week.
I was wondering who's going to end the show.
You always end it.
Well, I do, but you didn't talk. We didn't. Yeah, neither one of us talked this too much today because
John was here.
So thanks for listening. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.